News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the 8th of January, Anno Domini 2006. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we'll be bringing you all kinds of interesting news and views and stuff you can use. You're sounding a little, you need to pat yourself up a little, I think. You're sounding a little anemic in there, Rob.
I'm sorry.
That's much better, see?
Well, see, I wasn't sure if Matthew's going to say his name, and usually I always say my name when there's a guest, and, you know.
Sure, I know all about it.
Anyway.
I know.
How does one sound anemic?
Yeah, you just kind of.
I don't know, but you're doing it.
So give us a call. You know the numbers, 222-1180 and the 585 area code. 295-1180 outside the 585 area code. That's an 800 number. And if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, of course, it's just plain star 1180. It's just five little taps of the finger. And six, because you got to hit the send.
I wound up getting a real nice letter from Mrs. Linton.
Mrs. Linton. We love Linton. Mrs. Linton
sent me a real nice letter. Wanted my recipe for the rum balls, evidently.
Yeah, how shaky was
so does Elaine.
Yeah, how shaky was the handwriting?
Yeah, right. Last week we had Dave brought in rum balls that he had made with 20-year-old Jamaican rum.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Holy cow. Matter
of fact, I still had a few left. Lori goes, why don't you take them in? I said, they'll shoot me. So I had some left. And now you take them to wherever you want. I mean,
no, they were tasty.
Of the, you know.
I'm not even a fan of rum, and I liked them. So they were pretty good. Elaine loved them. Elaine, thanks you.
Yeah, she stopped by and. But,
I think she thanked you. She went, yeah. Dave.
Well, Mrs. Linton,
sure that's what she meant.
Is sending the dish back in, but with more cookies in it.
Oh, she's a wonderful woman. We love Mrs. Linton. We love your mom. She's the best. All right, listen, we're going to go right to the phones. We've got Lisa from Albion who has a very important question about Stinger. Lisa, how are you? What's your question?
My question is, well, I've got a couple, but they're really easy, and I've heard answers before from you guys, but
okay.
I've been in the car, so I'm finally in my computer. And the first one is when I try to go into safe mode, my Stinger doesn't come up anywhere, and I can't find it. So I usually have to run Stinger from my regular, you know, startup.
That's a common issue we see with Windows. When you go into safe mode, you don't necessarily go into your account. You go into a higher level administrator account.
Right. Okay.
So you have to navigate through the hard drive to your desktop in the other username.
Well, now,
the best way around that is just save Stinger to the root of the hard drive.
Okay.
Or some other folder, like create a folder
download
called Tango.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
at
then
the root
download
of the hard drive,
right
not
at the,
on your desktop.
C:\Tango. Create a folder right at C, not on your desktop.
Ah, gotcha.
And
okay.
So save all that stuff into there, and that's probably the best way to fix that.
Right. Okay. My other quick one I have Spam Subtract, and I have mail that comes into there, and I look through it before I delete it all, and one of them, it's a really weird, there are two of them, and it says my IP has been logged on to illegal sites.
Yeah, you get those from CIA.org and FBI.gov.
And
they're fake.
Just delete them.
They're fake. They contain a virus, and they've been going around for a couple of weeks now.
Beautiful.
Trying to get people to click on them and go to them.
The interesting thing is
yeah, right, but it's also fake. Everybody needs to listen to this. Listen up, folks. When you get email from the FBI or the CIA, or in fact anybody saying that your address has been logged and you have to go do something about it and yada, 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 it's fake.
And they don't
do that.
Generally speaking, if the police are going to come and arrest you, they don't warn you first.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, they're usually really like what they call the element of surprise.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's not you. Not a problem. Don't even worry about
it. Okay. And the last one is my runner error invalid back web application ID that pops up every time I boot on. How do I get rid of that?
What, repeat that, please.
It's a runner error invalid back web application ID 137903.
That's spyware.
Yeah, Backweb is a really nasty program that lets people log into your computer through the back door, through the web server.
Yeah, and you've got to run both the Edaware and SpyBot.
If you're lucky, the Backweb spy program has been removed, and that's your error message, is that it's trying to run and can't because your anti-spyware has already removed part of it, but not all of it.
So you're going to have to check that out.
Yeah, you may have to run the full Tango from top to bottom because some of those
are
really hard to get.
And again, save everything to that C:// Tango folder, and that'll and then go into safe mode, and you'll be able to do all of that stuff. Yeah. All right, our next caller, Peter from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Peter. What's your question?
Well, I got two disk drives in my computer.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to copy an original, which it will take in.
Mm-hmm.
And then it pushes it out when it's done. And then it asks for a blank. When I put the blank
I'm sorry, you're talking about CD drives?
DVD drive.
DVD, okay, you're copying DVDs.
Right, and it's some old home movies I had, and I had it on a DVD, and which was finalized. So I put it in, and it takes all the information, and then it shoves the tray back out. Whenever I put a blank disk in, and I've been using a DVD plus R disk, it won't take it.
That could be the problem. Are you sure your drive is a plus R and not a minus R?
It's a plus R, but when I read the instructions on the booklet, it said it's a DVD plus RW. Does that mean I can only use an RW in that drive?
It should also use R disks as well.
That's what I can't understand.
The other issue is, are you using a single-layer disk or a dual-layer disk?
It's a single layer.
And then what brand? Sometimes some drives just don't like a certain brand.
Mm-hmm. This is probably one of the cheaper brands. I got like 50-pack for about $10.
Yeah, that can be the problem. A lot of drives are very particular about the type of DVD, the brand of DVD that they particularly prefer. It's so weird. There seems to be no consistency.
No rhyme
one
or
model
reason,
to the next will change. One run to the next will change.
Yep.
It really is, you're going to have to make a lot of coasters to figure out.
And a lot of times it'll say like Creative Labs on the front of the drive, but the mechanism inside, they might use a dozen different mechanisms.
The other thing we found too was on some of the drives, believe it or not, was it had to have the 80-pin cable.
Yeah, if it's an ultra ADA drive, you have to have the 80-pin cable with the blue connector on it to make it function completely.
Right, it may read fine, but won't write.
Let it go.
Right.
Yep.
Can you write anything to that drive?
Yeah, I can write. I can write a CD. I mean, it'll take a it'll take the original CD, and then whenever it asks for a blank disk, I'll put a blank.
But now the other thing to test is, can you just write a data DVD? In other words, the way you copy data to a CD, you can also copy data to a DVD.
And when you're selecting it, you said it works copying a CD to a CD.
Right.
Now, when you go to do a DVD to a DVD, if you're using like Nero, it recognizes that it is a DVD that it's reading and it's going to write to?
Well, what it does is I'm using Sonic. I've got a Dell computer, and it's using Sonic, okay? And finishing copying the original, it'll ask for a blank disk. And when I put the blank disk in, it takes it in, and it's it works for
but
about 10
seconds. What blank disk is it looking for?
Wait a minute, let him finish.
Or a CD?
I want to know what happens when he puts the blank disk in.
Okay, when I put the blank disk in and I push it back into the system, it'll read something's happening for about 10 seconds, and then it just pushes the tray back out.
So it could be the Windows burning software conflicting with your Sonic burning software, or it could be that the DVD burning laser has failed.
Right.
CD burning and DVD burning use different frequency lasers.
And like I say, he's also got to make sure, because I know for a fact in Nero, you got to go up in the upper right-hand corner and tell it, make sure that you change it, that you're running or burning CDs versus DVDs or DVDs versus CDs.
Right.
So it knows what he's trying to copy.
Yeah, you got to manually change it. It just doesn't automatically know that.
It should.
It should, but it doesn't necessarily.
If it reads in a 4-gig DVD, it should know to write a 4-gig DVD.
All right, Peter, I think at this point your best bet, well, first try writing a blank DVD by itself and see if that actually works. If it doesn't, you've got a problem with the laser of the DVD. The second thing is, if that doesn't work, I'm afraid you're going to have to bring it to somebody because there are so many possibilities here that somebody's going to have to take a look at it. I'm sorry.
Yep. Nope, no, right there.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, our next caller is John from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
All right. I have a friend's laptop, and what has been happening with it is when you first boot it up and start it up, after about 10 minutes, it just cold shuts down. If you go to boot it up again, after about 4 or 5 minutes, it cold shuts down. Then you boot it up again, and it doesn't even get to the desktop before it shuts down.
Is this with or without the thing plugged in?
Tried it both ways. Now, what I've done this morning is I actually took the laptop outside and started it up. It seems to run longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. You've got a fan issue, I think.
Well, it's either a fan or it's some heat-related issue,
yeah,
clearly.
Yeah, the heat sink, the fan on the CPU, it runs for a little, because, yeah, the heat gets built up.
How old of a laptop is this?
2 to 3 years old.
One thing we've run into with some of the older laptops is they're just caked with dust inside. Yeah. If you're lucky, it's really hard on a laptop. If you're lucky, you can take a cover off and get to the fan and the heat sink and try to remove any of the dust that's in
there.
I've
seen more of them, though. You got to take
usually you can't get to it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, this isn't a chance it's a virus, then.
No, completely unlikely that it's a virus. It really is a classic heat-related symptom.
Heat-related, yeah.
Particularly if you bring it outside and it lasts longer. Viruses don't know whether they're inside
or
outside.
Yeah, it seems to last longer. So.
Yeah, it's because of the cold, and it's cooling down. The CPU isn't getting hot as fast because you are outside.
Yeah, the fan seems to go on for a while, then off, then on, then off. It seems the more CPU is working, then the fan turns on, obviously.
That's very common. It may be the fan isn't providing enough airflow.
Okay, is there a way to have a program that'll control the fan setting?
That's built into the hardware of the computer.
Yeah, that's either in there or it's not.
You might be able to set that in the BIOS, depending on what laptop you have. But the reality is that that it's likely, as they said, it's caked with dust.
Yeah.
Or the fan itself is failing.
You can always go into the BIOS, though, and it always has in there, especially on laptops, you can monitor the heat.
Yeah, it'll either tell you how fast the fan is spinning or what the temperature of the CPU is.
All right, okay. Real quick.
No,
one
we got to take a break.
We
got to go. Got to take a break. Our next, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites.
We're just having a little off-air conversation. Sometimes those can get even more interesting than the on-air stuff.
They certainly can. Before we go back to the phones, we have to remind everybody there's a really, really horrible security hole. Right now, in Windows. No, this is the one that's been around for a couple of weeks. What happened was a few weeks ago, this came to light. Microsoft said they would patch it in about 4 or 5 weeks when they have their normal patch Tuesday. People decided they really couldn't wait since it was out there in the wild. A couple of people created unofficial fixes. And then last week, Microsoft finally bowed to pressure and brought out this fix all by itself. So you need to do a Windows update now. If you haven't done it already this week, you need to go to your Internet Explorer and go to Windows Update and update your system because you are vulnerable. This is a terrible, bad thing. You don't even have to do anything. If it comes in your email, if it's just graphic pictures, and if it comes in your email and you even view it in the preview pane, which we keep telling you to turn off, or if you go to a website that has this thing and a bunch of websites have been hacked to add this graphic, and it can just be a one pixel white square, and you'd still get the problem. So,
well, they should, though, if they're running XP, have it these updates automatically.
Right, but check to see. Yeah. You know, go to the Windows update and do a check and see if you, in fact, got updated. Because if you didn't, you need to update now. It's called the WMF. It's a WMF, the Windows Metafile hole. And you really, really need to update it. Everybody listening, update your Windows immediately.
And apparently this hole has existed in a lot of previous versions of Windows.
Every previous version of Windows.
People are surprised that it's been, you know, 15, 20 years and no one's noticed it before.
Right, right. Well, that's done now. Those days of...
Well, it's like one uncovers the other, that uncovers another.
Right.
You know, and I mean...
But
you're
yeah.
not going to... You know, get the perfect mousetrap. I'm sorry, you know.
Well, that's true, but everybody, you need to get out there and do this. Slowly we turn to Marty in Niagara Falls, New York. Welcome, Marty. What's your question?
Oh, very good. Good morning. I had two questions. You answered one about the Stinger not showing up in safe mode.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
And the other one, trying to clean up a laptop computer, it came up, said that it has a virus, a malware program, and trying to get the spy bot search and destroy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we go to the website, and the only thing that we can come up with for downloads, it says it's a no adware. Did they change a name?
I don't.
No, you're probably getting.
Where you're going.
Yeah, you're probably getting snuck in by a misspelling. There's a real big issue on the internet.
How are you getting to it?
From the, you know, Let's Dance, I go to the spy bot, click on that, and it takes me to the spy bot search and destroy page.
Right, and then you click on English. Right, you click on America.
Right, and you look for the download.
And you click on download.
And it comes up with this no adware thing.
The first thing I see on the list... is please donate. You go down the list. Under the download section, the first thing I see is SpyBot Search and Destroy 1.4.
Right. Download now.
To the right of it is download here button. You click on that button, and it gives you four choices of a place to download it. Click on the big blue download here button for one of those. I picked the first one.
He might be getting hit by a browser hijack too.
Yeah, he could be.
Maybe are you getting that at all?
Well, what it did is it comes up. It takes me to this no adware thing, which seems strange, because I've gotten this, you know, the spy bot before. The virus that it comes up and shows, it says it's a malware program and it's a Trojan, but I ran all the other things and it comes up clean. We did the scan with this no adware because I didn't know if that was correct, and it picked out the Trojan, but it says you can't clean it unless you pay for the program, and then you go to try to register. It just doesn't.
What's your antivirus software?
Well, that's the other thing. It's a McAfee, but it's about a month out of date. So
yeah, you need to update that immediately.
Yeah you could have one of those PUPs, potentially unwanted programs.
Mm-hmm.
Is the way they label them, PUPs.
Right.
And well,
so when you run McAfee, you get this message about having a malware Trojan?
Well, the McAfee won't run. It says you have to go and verify because it's his subscription
out of date.
Okay.
Ran out.
So what program are you running when this when
well,
this
it shows up down in the toolbar. There's the little red X, and it says your machine is infected. You know, and it says click here to find to get rid of it. Well, I don't do
Let
that.
Let me make a suggestion here. Why don't you do this? Find a friend whose system is clean. Have them download all of the software for the Tango, burn it to a CD, and you load it from there and clean your machine.
Because you got something really nasty in
there.
Yeah,
you need to do that, and that should get you going with that. I don't know any better way to put that. That's the easiest way to do it. Find somebody with a clean machine and go from there. That's the easiest way to get around the problem you're having. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Rob is in with the news, and Dave, Steve, Rob, and Nick will be back with Sound Bites after that. We'll have weather and sports and all the wonderful things on Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
PCs to Macs. These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Sound Bites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites.
Talk about double duty there.
I know. He's
multitasking.
Multitasking, even as we speak. Okay. Our next caller is Walter from Rochester, who has a comment on laptop cooling. Welcome, Walter. What's up?
I had a similar problem, and I bought a cooling pad for like $40 at the store, and it totally just took over for the fan in my laptop that was broken, and I haven't had any problems since. So,
cool.
A lot of people are buying what are called cooling pads. They're essentially something you put under the laptop, and it has fans in it, and they blow colder air up right up against the bottom of the laptop. They also angle them up a little bit. I'm not a big fan of angled keyboards because that's one of the things that causes carpal tunnel, they say. But yeah, it's a pretty neat deal, and you're absolutely right, Walter. That's a good mid-level solution. If he really needs to have that machine checked out though, because if it's packed with dust, it's just going to get worse and worse, and eventually components will start to fail. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
but in terms of if you've got a new laptop and it's running too hot, a cooling pad is a terrific thing.
Yep. And I mean, what folks have to understand, it's not like your big box that you got sitting underneath your desk. You're talking about a device that everything is crammed into a
tiny little space,
surface area that's only maybe 3/4 inch thick.
Yeah.
And that's not a lot to fit a hard drive in there, a CD-ROM, a motherboard, CPU, and everything else. It's putting 20 pounds in a 5-pound sack.
Boy, that's the truth. All right, our next caller, Paul, from Dansville, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Good morning. I think you guys have a great show.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate listening to it all the time. I think I have something on my computer that I've not heard you describe before. It's a program that's downloaded itself called Spyware Strike 2.5.
Yes, that's the one I was talking about, and it's an SM. We were just talking about this off the air.
Okay.
And it is an SOB to get out, and that's putting it mildly.
Yes, thank you.
There's a lot of programs that claim to be anti-spyware, and that's one thing I was trying to lead up to with the previous caller. You get a little pop-up message, you're infected with spyware, you better run this program. Yeah. And it's a bogus message, it's a bogus anti-spyware program, and gives you more spyware.
To get this one out, you've got to do a lot of manual stuff.
Okay.
You literally got to go into the registry and remove some items, and then there's two programs that you've got to download, get them on, update it, and then reload and restart in safe mode, and then you can get them out. Because you're getting that warning about the W32, and it's Seneca, I think it is?
It says ID 87F7.tmp.
Yep.
It's Windows System 32.
Yep.
And downloader AQW. I've run the Security Tango many times.
No, this isn't going to get it for you.
I noticed that, and I've just tried going through add remove programs through the control panel, and it does not remove it at all.
Yeah. No, it's, like I say, we found, and I forget the name of the two programs. I apologize for that, but if you call me on Monday, I could give you the name of the two programs that you're going to need to download, get on your machine to get this cleaned out, because like I say, you got to go into the registry and go hunting through there and get out a few things, a few other files, and it's involved.
So it sounds a little bit more ugly than what I want to get into, maybe, if it's getting
could be,
registry.
Yes.
Yeah, it really wouldn't hurt to bring it to a competent professional like Dave or Steve and have them do it for you.
Okay.
Okey-doke.
Right. And I'm putting a link up for one of the removal procedures, but it is pretty long and complex.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Our next caller is Jerry from Albion, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Hi. We just bought a new PC. It's Linux-based operating system.
Cool. Which one?
It's Linspire 5.0.
Uh-huh.
And I probably want everything for nothing here. I wanted to avoid all the viruses and stuff, but now I'm noticing that there are a lot of applications that we did used to run in Windows that, they say you need to either have Windows or Mac. So the question is there anything I can download an application so that I can run, things like TurboTax and stuff like that?
Yeah, there are equivalents that you can get from the click and run. Linspire, for everybody else, is a version of Linux that comes on certain machines. And for $20 a year, you can go for their CNR service, which stands for Click and Run. It's a software delivery service that makes it real easy to install Linux software. I don't run it myself, so I'm not entirely certain what's in the warehouse. But you should take a look. one of the things that they have is a product. Well, first, there are equivalents. So yeah, you may not be able to run TurboTax.
Yeah, you cannot run TurboTax under Linux, but you can run many tax preparation programs.
Right. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, if you really need to run TurboTax, try running a product called Wine, W-I-N-E, which is a Windows emulator. And it lets you run many Windows programs under Linux.
Okay.
Again, I don't know if that's available in the Click and Run warehouse for Linspire, but I know it's available, and so I'm sure it's there somewhere. And once you install it, you know, the CNR service has about 2,000 free Linux software titles, which, you know, there's about 18,000, so it doesn't have the whole list in the Click and Run warehouse. But check and see if that's there. Wine is one of them. There may be another. Or it may be under a different name in the Click and Run warehouse, but that's the way you'd find it. We're going to take another quick break, back in just a couple of minutes, with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Lint, and Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I know I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
He's pretty sure anyway. And this, we all think at least, is Soundbites.
At least it has been for the past, 16 years.
Exactly. And we're back to the phones and we're talking to Bob from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Morning. Picked up a spyware program called Spy Sheriff, and it's apparently removed some of my McAfee antivirus software, and I can't print and a bunch of other things. But my question is, I'm going through the Security Tango process, and I've had problems with pop-ups for some time, and I thought if I don't get it all, I guess the vendor of the computer has given me a process to reinstall the software from read-only partition. My question is, does the registry, is the registry protected on that read-only partition, or do I...
Well, I've got some good news and some bad news about that.
Okay.
If you reinstall your operating system from the read-only partition, you'll get rid of your virus. That's the good news. The bad news is you'll also get rid of every program you've ever installed and every document you've ever written.
Right.
The reinstallation procedure takes your computer back to the way it was the day you bought it. Literally.
I understand, and it would be probably a couple of days to reinstall everything. So.
But the thing if you're worried about pop-ups and all that other stuff, you go through the Tango and get rid of it there, and then you're seeing these pop-ups. Well, your only reason you're getting pop-ups is because you're using Internet Explorer. If you switch to a product like Firefox, which, oh, by the way, is free, you do away with pop-ups at no extra cost.
And it also appears that Spy Sheriff is another one of those bogus anti-spyware programs. It is more spyware than it is an anti-spyware.
No, I understand. I use Firefox, but I still have... Should I remove Internet Explorer from the computer?
Well, you can't. But more importantly, a lot of the pop-ups now are coming from the virus software on your machine. So getting rid of the viruses and getting rid of the spyware will get rid of the pop-ups.
Okay. And what do you recommend for spyware? I saw Spyware Doctor recommended by PC Magazine.
The ones that we like are listed in the Tango, Adaware and SpyBot.
I've got Adaware installed on my computer.
And you need SpyBot.
Okay.
Yeah, the problem is Adaware goes wide on your hard drive, but doesn't go really deep into the registry, whereas SpyBot goes deep into the registry, but not really wide on the hard drive.
All right.
So both of them together, make sure you've got the latest versions of each, and make sure they're completely updated. Of course, that's all part of the Tango, so if you're dancing the Tango without skipping a step, you're good to go.
We had another client come in, and that's all you really need. I mean, we might recommend once in a while another utility like CW Shredder, but if you're running those two mainly, you're good. One of the other things, though, that we ran into, it sounded like this person was going the same direction. What else can I run? Well, we had one client with four antivirus programs on. figured if one wasn't good enough, you know, if one's good, four's got to be better.
Right.
And was wondering why the machine was running slow.
And you have to worry about the bogus anti-spyware programs. You get a spyware, you get a virus that pops a window up. You're infected. Click here to clean your machine. Don't click there. Don't pay them money, and because they aren't going to clean your machine.
You know, again, I blame my parents.
See, now
I could write one of those and make a fortune.
Yeah, we are programmed to obey signs. See, so you got to admire the gall of someone who writes a spy program that asks for money. That people
because
pay,
you have spyware.
Because you have spyware. Yeah, you've got spyware. Well, okay, you do because this is spyware.
Right.
But it's asking for money to clean itself, and
it
then won't.
It doesn't.
And then
right,
it doesn't.
Right, right,
yeah.
right. All right, our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
How are you this morning?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. I have a question. My computer just shut down and restarted on its own while I turned off my printer. I don't know if there was a coincidence or not. Didn't touch any buttons, and it just restarted on its own. When it popped back, after it restarted, I received an error message saying that it has recovered from a serious error, and then SpySweeper popped up on the restart, and it gave me the option to keep or delete a kernel fault check, which was in the startup item, so I kept it. It gave me the location, was in the system root, system 32, dump prep, file. It said in registry or startup folder.
Yeah, a lot of that is done by Windows to help programmers figure out why Windows crashed, and it's of no use to the average person.
Yeah.
Okay, the computer's running fine.
It's possible that there was some sort of static electricity glitch.
Okay.
When you shut your printer off, if you shuffled across the rug, particularly in the dry winter months,
if you shuffled across the rug. Okay, so that kernel fault check is really, I mean, I chose to cap it.
Yeah, you could look at the file and it would probably tell you what information was in memory. It would give you this binary list of stuff.
At that particular time, yeah.
Right. It would help a programmer who wrote Windows figure out why Windows crashed.
If you're not a Windows programmer, it's kind of moot.
Yeah. So, okay, I was just curious on why something like that would happen.
I've had a couple of...
We've had a lot of people with that problem.
And Windows defaults to saving the contents of your memory. And we've had
which
is a good thing. But we've had customers. You get a gig of memory in, and when Windows crashes, it saves that 1 gig file, and then it crashes 5 minutes later, saves another 1 gig file,
and another one gig,
and it eats up their hard drive, and then it really crashes because your hard drive is full.
But in general, for everybody, in particularly during the winter months, you need to be very aware of static electricity. There are a couple of things you can deal with. One is, of course, you know, as I've always said, get rid of the rug and compute naked. But if you can't do that, then. What, all of a sudden I'm not allowed to say that anymore?
The look on Rob's face.
If you can't do that, then maybe an anti-static
spray
or something
Nick
on
naked.
The floor or whatever. that'll work. All right, we're going to take a quick break while Rob scrubs out his brain back in just a couple of minutes with sound bites on 1180 WHAM.
America's longest running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enrich.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites. Our next caller is Michelle from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Michelle. What's your question? Michelle, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, what's your question?
Okay, my question is I'm trying to do a local networking connection, a home connection between a computer that's running XP Pro and XP Home Edition. I've got a DSL router and hooked up to
good for you.
The internet, and I can get onto the internet successfully with both computers, but I'm only able to see the client from the host, but not the other direction.
You have to turn file sharing on both computers so it can share out to the network to the other computer.
And they both have to be of the same work group.
Yeah, they both have the same work group, and file sharing is turned on by both.
And you have to make sure that you've got XP Pro set up to do peer-to-peer file sharing, not regular network file sharing, because XP Pro is really looking to find a server somewhere to be on a real network, whereas XP Home only does peer-to-peer networking.
Okay.
And sometimes the browsing function just doesn't work. And if you go to start, run, and do // and the address of the other computer, it'll find it and log in to it through the network, even though you can't browse for it.
Okay. So where would I find that peer-to-peer sharing on the XP Pro?
Under networking. When you run the control panel,
mm-hmm.
right? In the control panel, you have network connections. You also have the network setup wizard if you haven't already set it up once
yeah,
before.
I've done that about 5 times.
Okay, that's good. If you're looking to do and what happened when you did that?
It goes through the steps and then it seems to run fine, but I still have the same situation on both computers.
All right, try this. Right click on my computer. Select properties from the drop down and go to computer name. Make sure that it's...
Each computer needs its own unique name as well.
Right. You've got to have a name for the computer, and you have to have a work group. Make sure that's the same on both.
Doesn't the networking wizard let you create a floppy disk you take to the other computer, and so it sets itself?
She said she did all that.
Yeah, and that doesn't work that great.
You did do that, right?
I did the floppy. I can try that one again.
Yeah, that's the thing that should work. It should set them both up. You create the floppy on Pro and take it over to home. Now, what the other question is, what router are you using?
It's a Link system. The model number is BEFSR41.
Yeah, can both machines can get to the internet, they just can't see each other?
That's correct.
You've turned on file sharing on both.
The main can see the client, but the client can't see the main.
Yeah. Try that again and make sure that it is set up correctly and make sure that main is set up, it has some sort of file share itself set up. I mean, you can't just turn on file sharing.
Good
you have
point.
To actually share a folder. Right-click on a folder, select sharing, turn it on.
Yeah, that's a good point,
then
too.
It'll be able to see that folder.
If there's nothing to share, it doesn't show
home
you anything.
Home may show you the whole drive. Pro won't. You have to actually create a shared folder.
Or
and when inside my computer where it says shared folders, that's only for different users of that same computer. You have to actually turn on network sharing
right, right
of
click
folders.
On a folder and say share. Our next caller is Doug from Victor, New York. Welcome, Doug. What's your question?
Yeah, hi. I've been fighting a problem with an IBM laptop that had some problems with some Windows XP Pro files getting accidentally deleted. I wound up having to reinstall Windows, reinstalled all my applications. Everything was working okay. And now I've had, keeps coming up and wants to install Service Pack 2. I've had it install it now 3 times, and every time it gets done, half my applications don't work. I can't connect to the internet. All kinds of problems. And I had Service Pack 2 on this prior to having to reinstall Windows. Just wondering if you've got any idea what I can try.
Now, have you also gone to the manufacturer of that particular laptop?
Yes, I have, and updated the BIOS. Yes, I did.
Other drivers for the motherboard,
video
Ethernet, and everything else,
audio, everything.
Haven't done that. I asked.
Well, that's then. That's probably why you're having part of the problems.
Okay.
Because not only do you have to do the update to the BIOS, but you also have to get all the updates for the motherboard, the video card, if there's a network card in there. There's usually a whole laundry list of updates.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter whether you're doing a PC or a laptop. You've got to get all those updates, get them in place, and run them before you do the Service Pack 2 update. And matter of fact, Microsoft even tells you to do that.
Well, I thought I had done that when I got the BIOS. I thought I got all the
That's just the one. And you got to go back and get all of them.
And they all have to be installed separately and individually.
Yep.
Okay.
Which is annoying.
So give that a shot and let us know how you make out.
Will do. Thank you.
All righty.
All right, thanks. Our next...
I've seen a bunch of those update discs. We've done some reinstalls in the last couple of weeks. And it's always annoying. It pops up a list. Here's all the software you need to install.
Mm-hmm.
So install it. I have to click this one, reboot. Click this one, reboot. Click this one, reboot.
I'll tell you what, as a Linux user, having to reboot after installing anything on Windows just makes me crazy.
Yeah.
It just, we were having a little contest at work as to who had their machine un reboot, you know, who's had it up running uptime the longest. And we had one laptop. I'm talking about desktops. Yeah. I'm not talking about servers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Desktops. We had a guy who was who finally left us, and we hired a new guy to take his place, and his machine had been up like 1,000 days or some silly number like that. And it was kind of sad to turn it off, you know, because yeah. he was going. So it was a whole different mindset. But it makes me crazy. You install a little patch to the notepad, and you have to reboot the system. It just makes me crazy.
Well, especially annoying is a system restore. You know, we wiped and restored a machine so the customer could sell it again. It's a system restore disk, and it doesn't load all the other drivers in. You have to do those manually.
Yes. Well, Mac, yes. Norton's the same way. When you go to do their updates, you've got to sometimes reboot 3 or 4 times to get all the updates.
Yeah.
It doesn't do it in one shot.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about, and it really, truly is one of the things that makes me utterly crazy. A lot of things make me crazy. We could go through a whole laundry list, and they're not all computer things, I just want you to know. I'm just on the ragged edge here, just holding on by my fingernails. Okay,
ouch.
We're going to take a quick break while I calm down, see if I can adjust my meds. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Take a walk around the block.
I'm good. We've got Dave Enright. We've got Steve. Look at me. I'm calmed down. I'm calming. My blood pressure. You can see the blood draining out of. I look
slowly.
Like a cartoon character.
Yeah,
I get all nuts.
Steve, I think we're going to move the other side of the table.
I think that would, or another room. I'm just a ticking bomb today. We're going to be back with
Dave.
Your
ponytail's too tight.
It is. Story of my life. This is my Steven Seagal impression. There it is. We'll be back with Dave and Steve and Rob and me, Nick, on Soundbites. 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbite. We're going to get back to the phones in a little bit, but before we do that, we have something very important to talk about, and that's our website.
Oh.
At soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was choice for product of the year. Hardware won. It was in many cases a Mac poll. I had people go over and talk about what their favorite product was in the opinion.
Had to be the iPod.
It was the iPod. It was all about the iPod. People loved their iPods.
But you know, like Steve was saying, though, you know, I've heard more and more folks. The big issue right now, though, with the iPods, like Steve was saying, was that they're putting them in their pockets,
and
they go to sit down,
sitting on them,
and there goes the screen.
Yep.
or they got
the little nano, the little thumb, the little chewing gum stick version, and they break it in half.
Yep. Yeah.
Run it through the laundry.
I saw another.
That's a problem.
Yep.
You know, like our flash drives.
Yeah.
The 256. There's one out right now that. It's an MP3 player.
Yeah.
It's thin, and it comes with a complete headset.
Yeah, Lexar has one that we've sold. It's really neat. Physically really small.
Yeah, and it plugs into your, so you can shuffle all the, and then you just got a little headset, so you can put it in your pocket. It's unbreakable, I would think. I mean,
it probably isn't waterproof.
Well,
right. Well, that was one of the things
not most
people
of them
were
are.
Saying. The Shuffle and the Nano are flash-based, so there's no mechanical hard drive,
right.
No moving parts.
Right.
So they're wondering, can it survive a trip through the laundry?
Probably could.
All the people that keep asking, you know, let it dry for a week. Well, see, the problem isn't the water, it's the soap.
Yeah, right, exactly. Although, you know, in the old days, when I worked at the computer center, back when I sold computers before I went straight.
With the keyboards?
Yeah, we used to take the keyboards and dip them in a mild solution of soap and water, let them sit overnight, let them dry for a week, and they'd be good.
You could take them into a shower. You could take them into a shower, hit them with real hot water, stand them on end, and let them dry for a week, and then they'd be okay.
Yeah.
But the electronics were a lot different in them back in our day when we had the keyboards, the old AT.
Sure, when we had a computer uphill both ways in the snow.
In the snow. That's how I met your mother.
Yeah. and I do remember, speaking of which, when I was showering, it wasn't a keyboard that was in there with me. I'm pretty sure I was alone, is what I'm saying. I just want you to know that.
So it's the stickiness of soda, the sugar in coffee, you know, that makes the button stick. But then it's not necessarily the water causing a short circuit, it's the rust that develops.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's the problem.
Yeah. And a new keyboard is what, $10?
Yeah, exactly. New keyboard is $10. And let's all, instead of back in those days, it was $100.
Yeah.
And let's also make it clear that we never, never, never advocate taking your laptop into the shower with you under any set of circumstances.
Although there are several waterproof iPod cases designed to be taken in the shower. A new one just got released at CES. We got to talk about CES, all the cool toys that came out last week.
Amazing cool toys at CES. I can't believe I missed it. Every year I promise myself I'm going to go next year.
Someone came out with a floating speaker for an iPod.
Yeah.
You put your iPod in this floating bright yellow box so you can't miss it, and then put it in the pool.
Sure.
And it floats around the pool, and you can
hear
it. Or the tub, yeah. And it's waterproof, and the speaker's waterproof.
I can't believe somebody hasn't come out with a rubber ducky and put your iPod in.
There's the iGuy that's looks like Gumby.
Right.
And then they have a kitty out now, the iKitty. And one of their facts, a company called Spec, one of their facts, FAQs, is why don't you have an iDog? And they said there are so many different breeds of dogs, they would upset anyone if they came out with one breed and not another. But cats pretty much look the same, no matter what breed they are.
They don't.
Oh,
man, they're going to pork off a whole bunch of cat people.
You got little pointy ears, you got four legs, and you got a tail.
Yeah.
But the general shape is the same.
Right. Well, and that actually is true.
Well, so is a dog. It's got two ears and four
very
legs.
Rarely. No. You'll put I love my, Shelties, or I love my Corgis, or I love my Dobermans. You don't put just a basic I love my dog unless you got a breed that doesn't have a sticker, Mutt. So I understand
that. Well, then it
says
I love my mutt,
Right. That's me. My dogs are part mongrel, part mutt. That's kind of a mix.
Hinds.
Yeah. What?
Hines.
They're Hines. They're 57 varieties. All right. This week's poll on our website is about a couple of months ago, we talked a little bit about RFID chips, RFID, radio frequency identification chips. And we talked about what would you put them in. It is now not only likely but common that people are starting to get them implanted in themselves. And the people they're talking to who are doing it right now are the people who, you go to your front door and it just opens by itself because it's locked, but you go to it and it opens because it recognizes you, your car starts and all of that stuff. The chips are only about $2. That you got to pay for the electronics on the other end, of course. They come within 3 inches of a reader, and then and those are only about $50. So, by the time you get everything done, you've spent thousands of dollars, but what the heck.
I saw a TV show once, one of the CSIs probably, where nightclubs, the girls would put the RFID chips, implant them in themselves so they didn't have to carry a purse for their credit card information.
People are doing that in Japan for several years now. You've been able to do that in your cell phone. Your cell phone is your credit card. Just wave it in front of a soda machine and out comes your soda or whatever that's all about. But the thing is that you've got, I don't need to be tracked.
Well, there's already the tracking 24/7. Stuff in our money, so we don't have to worry about the RFID chip.
Right. So far, 75 people have voted on our website at soundbites.org. 61% of you have said no thanks. 28% of you have said only under very, very special circumstances. 5% of you have said sure, and 4 people voted the Macintosh. I always try to put the Macintosh there so Mac people don't have to think. They can just click on the very last choice. It'll almost always be the Mac. That's what they do. And then when you're done with that, underneath it, you'll see a yellow. Some of you may have to scroll. Get over it. You'll see a yellow box underneath there. And if you click on the give us your opinion, it takes you to my website at asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Thank you. And you can give us your opinion about why or you would or would not implant an RFID chip in yourself. They're pretty cool. They're pretty cool. Conceptually, they're very cool. I mean, I would definitely put one in my dog.
My two already mm-hmm. have it.
Yep, I would. That's not a problem. They can be tracked. They can be. They can be. You know, recovered if they're stolen. Whatever that's all about. I love the idea of that, but putting it in myself, not so thrilled.
Well, the thing of it is with my two dogs, what we had to do. I mean, the chip literally just has a number in it.
Right.
And what we had to do, my wife did it.
Sure.
Sat there and filled out all these cards. And literally all it is putting in your name, your address, the dog's name, you know, vital information that, or if we weren't around, who's an emergency number to call. So
it goes into a database.
So literally, and she showed us, is every vet in them are now getting them. They scan it. They take that number, go over to the computer, plug it in, and if you've registered it, that number comes up with the information you've supplied. And it says, oh, this number, and it pulls up our whole sheet of information with Lori's and my name, the dog's name, and everything else, and where it lives. And through that, with the pets, they get one free ride, they call it. Just if you have that chip and your animal happens to get loose, they'll usually give it one free ride. Whereas my one daughter... My granddaughter had let the dogs out,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of days later, my daughter got to pick the dogs up, and $63 later.
Yeah, right. I can certainly see doing it to my dogs.
Yep.
Maybe even my cats, but not to people. It's not something that works for me.
And they're also talking about, and have started in many cases, shopping markets, tags in packaging and library books. So right. You don't have to stand in line at a register. You just walk through a sensor. Everything you've got in your cart gets tagged and billed.
One thing I wouldn't mind, though, and here's the thing that you could have full control. Now, say, just like the dogs, they put a chip in you. Mm-hmm. And all it is a number. And then, say, through your doctor, you could sit there and put in vital medical information,
mm-hmm.
whether it be prescriptions, and in my case, you know, heart attack, high blood pressure.
Yeah, we already have the medical bracelets.
If they were just to scan you with that chip in there and it came up with a number and you were in the database, you would have full control of medical information, which could be vital.
Yeah, absolutely. I get that part of it. But it also means as you go through... into buildings, they can read you. As you drive down the thruway, they can read you. They can read you everywhere.
But again, though, you know, if it's just that chip number and all it's going to provide is medical information.
No, it's still a unique ID. Once you have a unique ID implanted in you, it can be used for anything.
So who gets number 666?
It's not 666, it's 616. They you know this?
Six to the six to the six.
Right, no. They uncovered... an old document that seems to be a more original copy of that section of the Bible, and it was miscopied. It's 616 is the number of the beast.
You were watching that same program,
which
Discovery,
yeah,
or History Channel.
The History Channel. It's 616, which also, by the way, happens to be the area code of Ann Arbor, Michigan. But that's another story entirely. I think it's Ann Arbor. Anyway, the point is that Grand Rapids. The point is that it's not 666. It's 616. But even so, hey, I'm just, get over it. I don't know that an RFID chip is where I want to be. It's not my thing. I don't care. We're going to go back to the phones now and wake up Rob. We're going to talk to George from Fairport, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Hey, I bought for Christmas an educational CD for my grandson. I loaded the software, but couldn't run the CD. I get this error message, wrong disk inserted. I got a new one from the software outlet sent to me, had the same problem. In addition, now I can't even uninstall the program from either the uninstall on the CD or the control panel.
All right, question for you.
Yep.
When you get the CD,
yep.
Did you check the specs on it to make sure that it'll run on your machine?
Yeah, what are the system requirements for this program? Operating system, processor speed, memory speed, video card.
Does it need DirectX 9?
Yeah, it needs 16-bit DirectX compatible sound card and video card.
And you got all that?
Yeah.
And you got enough processor speed, video speed?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've got 512 megabytes and... I got a P4. It's a fairly new computer, about a year old.
What it sounds like is the first disk was bad, and it partially installed, and now it's stuck in a half-installed state.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You may have to find a manual uninstall instruction at the manufacturer.
Yeah, you may have to call them, not the place you bought it from, the people who actually make the CD, make the software, and talk to them about this problem, because they're going to have to give you a list of everywhere this thing drops code into the registry and everywhere else, and you're going to have to go in and get it out.
Wait, one thing you can also do is go to that particular website for the software and visit their FAQs, frequently asked questions. And there might be somebody that's had the same problem and has a solution on how to get around it or how to fix it. They might have it, like Nick and Steve were saying, a patch that will get you over that hurdle to get it finished installed. So check that out first.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHEM.
Computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites.
Could be.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's a lovely thing. We before we get back to the phones, we should talk a little bit about what theoretically will be announced Tuesday, Apple and Intel.
Yeah, there's a lot of big announcements. Well, let me back up half a second and talk about CES last week. I already posted a link. There's a really neat video that some guy put together. Bill Gates was doing a keynote at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, touting all the new features of Windows Vista that we might see by the end of the year. So we're still looking probably 12 months away. And they superimposed a video of the Macintosh over top of Bill Gates's speech, showing that the Mac already has all these features that he's touting for another year worth of waiting for Windows Vista.
Yeah. I write an article for Computer Link magazine every month, as do you, Steve. And this month, I was talking about the features in Vista and saying, well, all you Linux people, all you Mac people, stop laughing.
Yep. Yeah, the sideboard.
It's finally been invented.
The sideboard that has gadgets in it. You know, Apple calls that the dashboard with widgets in it.
Right. And G-applets or G-desklets under GNOME. And KDE has a different name for them, Carumba.
Live video in a minimized window in your start menu or in the dock on the Macintosh. You know, we've had that
or the
for
dock
years.
Under Window Maker. Yeah. You know, yeah, it's been around for 100 years under both Linux and the Mac. But finally, thank God, it's been invented.
Been invented, yeah.
By Bill Gates.
So now next week is Macworld in San Francisco, where all the Macintosh developers get together. And there's a lot of, I'm sorry, not Mac developers, Mac publishers and the general public. There's a lot of rumors about what Apple's going to announce, and one of the biggest rumors are the Intel-based machines are going to be announced. And then the joke is, when are they going to ship? Because last year, Jobs said they wouldn't start shipping Intel Macs until June. So Intel-based laptops possibly coming out. But the big question is, what are they going to do first? When's it going to be available? And one of the things that we really like about the switch to Intel is we don't have to worry about the megahertz myth anymore, that we're going to be running on the same clock speed as the PC, so we can just talk about the same numbers. But from an engineering standpoint, the PowerPC is just a so much better chip. So it's,
yeah, we were talking about that. I love the PowerPC chip. What a great, great thing.
It's a significantly faster chip at a lower clock speed. It just has more heat, so it doesn't make it fit very well into a desktop or even laptop computer. And in fact, the PowerPC came from IBM's Power Servers, so it was designed as a server chip. And Apple's been using it in the workstation. So next weekend we should have a list of all the stuff that came out at Macworld. Wednesday night is the Apple Cider Users Group meeting at East High School. And hopefully we'll be hearing from our live reporters at Macworld.
Nice.
Seeing what's been announced. And we'll see when anything announced actually ships.
Yep, yeah. Well, right, that's different.
Yeah.
Well, we'll keep you informed of that next week. In the meantime, we're back to the phones. We have Mick from Buffalo, New York, on the line. Welcome, Mick. What's your question?
This is another Christmas question. Great show. I've ordered a new video card, and I'm going to install it, and I wondered, I'd call you guys ahead of time and find out, is it better? Now, the one I have is an all-in-wonder Radeon, and should I uninstall all the software associated with it before putting the card in and installing the new, I'm going with a newer Radeon with a little better frame rate. And I'm wondering whether I should uninstall everything, the multimedia center, all the drivers, then try to then put the card in, then install the new drivers and so forth.
Yeah, it's half a dozen one, six of the other. I mean,
it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Especially if you're going with another ATI Radeon card that probably right. has very similar drivers as your old Radeon card.
Yeah,
right. It really is a great idea. Uninstall all the drivers. And then it'll tell you to shut down or reboot. So shut down, take out the old card, put in the new card, let it find the new one. It's not a bad idea at all. And it only takes a few extra minutes, so go for it.
To get the other, like you said, the media part in it, and if it's not in the newer one, then you're not going to need it. You're just freeing up more space. So, yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Well done, Mick.
One of the other things to be wary of is, depending on the age of the motherboard, a lot of the older motherboards have a 1X or 2X AGP slot. And if you buy a new card today, it might be a 4X or 8X card.
Right.
So you have to be sure that your slot can fit the card you're using.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why I'm a little leery about telling folks. Yeah, just go ahead and take out everything. If you make a note of the programs that are in there in the add remove programs already there.
Dealing with the ATIs. He had the all-in-wonder, so that's got the media center and the TV
there's
stuff.
There's a bunch of them there. Yeah. If you make a note of that, and if you're unsure and you go out and get the card and come back and all of a sudden it's the wrong card, and you want to switch them out, or go back.
Put the old
same
one back in. Yeah,
yeah. Whereas if you get the new one in, it works fine. Now you've got this list. Now you can go in the add remove programs and slowly
remove
them.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Keith on a cell phone. Welcome, Keith. What's your question?
You there? Okay.
Yeah. Are you there?
I'm here. I think I'm here.
You pulled over to the side of the road,
there,
right?
But I'm here. Yeah. I got a couple questions, question and comment. First question is, I have a car with memory seats on it, and sometimes it doesn't remember where I set it.
Mm-hmm.
And other times, it seems to be, like today, it was fine, but I didn't readjust it. I didn't hit my button setting until after the car had warmed up a little bit. Could the cold affect the memory that
yeah absolutely
in.
Most definitely
all absolutely right.
And it also a lot can depend on where your buttons are. I've seen cars where the buttons are on the seat, so when you open the door you push the button, but that's also where all the snow gets tracked in now during the winter,
right? And also you're right, when the car, and also depends on where the memory chips are in the car itself as to how quickly they warm up. And
all right, so basically it could be cold related.
Absolutely could be. You're in Rochester,
cold
Keith. Everything
and
is cold related.
I mean, the weather right now, we granted it's winter, and we've had some snow, but right now this dank weather where it's been not quite cold enough to snow, but it's been rainy and misty and really blah.
And the other comment, I was having a problem with Roadrunner, and I couldn't connect. I would call them, and you go through this whole litany of I'm plugging this, doing that, and then okay, it would work, and you would do ping tests and all this other crap. This was going on like every week. It wouldn't work. So then they tell you to go through the same litany over and over, and I kept telling them, I said, it's not at my end, it's at your end. So the guy goes, I want you to try this. So I do it, and then all of a sudden I raise my voice, and I go, oh, my God, there's flames shooting out of my computer. and you heard the guy go, and I go, no, I'm just kidding. And he started laughing. But what the problem was, when they built the house, the line that back then it was Cablevision installed had deteriorated, and I was leaking signal.
Yep.
And my whole basically track development has had the problem where they have to come in and replace the cable. So what he did, he just ran a new cable outside and laid it on top.
And that's the whole problem.
The TV signal comes in stronger than the Roadrunner signal.
Yeah, I have that problem. Every 2 years, they have to replace my lines because the squirrels chew them.
And that's the whole problem with phone-in tech support, even the problem we have with the show here. Someone calls up with a problem. You're not sitting in front of their computer or their TV or their whatever. So it's very, very hard to know what to tell them. So you have to start with the very, very basics. Is it plugged in? Is the light on? Can you ping here and there?
On the positive side, the Time Warner at least has people that speak fluent English. English, even though they're located in Canada. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah. Hey. You're saying that many Canadians can actually speak English? That's a lovely thing. Thanks, Keith. Nice. Real nice. I believe there are
have
whole sections
day,
of Canada where English is the preferred language.
Have you seen that Bigfoot commercial?
Yeah, yeah. I have. It's very funny.
Because I'm Canadian, eh?
Yes, because I'm Canadian. Eh? All right, our next caller, Ginny from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Ginny. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I wondered if it's safe to use and if you've ever heard of Netcraft's free anti-phishing toolbar.
Yeah, I have not specifically had any use or any real exposure to that one, Ginny. But I am really leery of every toolbar, every single toolbar there is.
They've got some spyware, or depending on how they're written, they get attacked and wind up letting in other stuff that the original toolbar wasn't supposed to.
Right. So, if it's, be aware that it's not...
potential.
It's got a potential either to be spyware or to be vulnerable. Because most of these, when they're written, they're not written to the same standards as the operating system.
I see. So your suggestion is stay away from it.
I'm not a big fan of any of those add-on toolbars. Not one. I would recommend zero toolbars.
I have seen, over the course of the years, those cause more problems than they solve. I mean, they're supposed to make your life easier and everything else, but with the onslaught of spyware and viruses and Trojans and everything else, they just open the doors, it seems, to let that much more in.
Yeah. All right, our next caller, Dan from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dan?
Nice show, guys. I have a pop-up that I'm trying to get rid of. The pop-up keeps coming up saying my trial to Movie Land has expired, blah, 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 that kind of thing. I thought it comes in through a notifier.exec. How do I get rid of this thing?
Do you have something called Movie Land?
Yeah, I must have, yeah. And
did you?
I uninstall that then?
Yeah, if you've got a Movie Land product on your system, then you just uninstall it and you should be good. I mean, the idea here is many of these, we've been talking about viruses all day, but sometimes it's a real message. You had something called Movie Land, whatever that may be, and you had a trial period. The trial's over. Now, if you're going to use it, they want you to pay for it.
Right.
So just uninstall it and you'll be good to go. You won't have Movie Land anymore, but if you're not going to pay for it, you don't have it anyway.
Check it in the ad remove programs.
Okay, thank you very much.
There you go.
Theoretically, that window should say subscribe or uninstall, but it may not.
Yeah.
Well, the pop-up may not. The pop-up may just say, now you got to go do it, and then the regular program will
I think they're also hoping that you won't uninstall it and keep, bugging you to...
Right. If I were writing one of those, I wouldn't have an unsubscribe button. Subscribe button. That's all I'd have. All right, Larry, on a cell phone, what's up?
What I have 21 programs running in the background on my computer, and I'd like to know, do I need all those programs running in the background?
Mostly, if you're on Windows, yeah.
There's probably hundreds of programs running in the background that don't put a face in the application monitor.
Right. Generally, a program is pretty much loosely defined as any module doing anything. So if you're only seeing 21, you're actually not bad. There are those that have a lot more than that.
The danger is that some of them may be viruses and spyware.
But you don't know that.
But you don't know that. So what you can do is type the name of that program into Google and see what pops up. If it's a legitimate Windows process or if it's an illegitimate virus process, that should help you determine whether you need that or not. Then the next big question is, how do you remove whatever that is? And if it's a virus, that's a bigger
Adware
issue.
Adware and SpyBot and antivirus software.
Right. I have Adware already on there. It doesn't seem to be bringing up any of these programs.
SpyBot also?
I don't have SpyBot.
You want SpyBot?
Yeah, you can try that,
because that's
too.
Only doing half the battle.
All right.
Because, see, Adware goes wide, SpyBot goes deep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you do need both. There's no question of that. It's a tough thing. There are so very many different things that could be running that it's hard to get a full list of all of those things. There's stuff out there, but man, I'll tell you what, it's just not easy. It's not easy to find.
Yeah, well, like what I'm seeing here, I have two RUD 32s running.
And that's the problem. There, you'll find run32.dll. You'll find a bunch of service hosts. And who knows what they're actually doing? Probably 99% of them are legitimate. But you don't know because Windows doesn't make it easy to find out.
Okay. All right, because it seems like it's using up memory.
It is.
Well, yeah, it is, and it will be. And that's why, you know, it's very hard to have enough memory for Windows. They sell a lot of machines now with 128 meg and 256 meg. That's not enough. You want a minimum of half a gig. A gig is better.
Yep.
Particularly if you're going to run multiple programs at the same time. Most people I know keep, you know, if at least their email and Solitaire up all the time, and probably their web browser and word processor or whatever. And by the time you do that, you're swapping all the time, unless you've got at least a half a gig of RAM.
Yep.
I just looked on my Mac, and I have 46 processes running, but I've only got 3 applications, my web browser and my audio recorder.
Right.
And then the process viewer.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's exactly right, and that's how it works. All right, our next question, Brian from Bloomfield, New York. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Hi, thanks. I have a question. My computer, I haven't used it in a while, and somehow a lock got on there, and I can't get into my computer. I tried Guest. It said the account has been disabled.
Well, that's good.
And I tried the regular username, and I can't remember the password. So do you have any? It's Windows 2000 Professional. And do you have any, like, suggestions of what I could use?
Erase and reinstall. That's about the only thing with Windows 2000.
Yeah. If you call Microsoft, you're going to pay $25 an hour. But if you call Microsoft with the serial number and everything else, they may be able to help you. But
if you registered that version of Windows under that serial number with your name,
right,
and can somehow prove it's really you. See, right. The danger is that, you know, someone else could get a hold of a computer and say, I forgot my password, and they're trying to break into it.
Right. Yeah, the thing that is, though, is there is a file, which I won't tell.
Right.
And seriously, I won't. But there is a way to do it. But I've already paid that to find out how to do it. And if you want it done, yes, we can do it. And sometimes. I won't even guarantee it all the time, but we can go in there. Literally, what we have to do is take the hard drive out of the machine, put it on ours,
all right,
and go looking to, reset it.
All right.
Otherwise, you know, it's a matter of erasing and restarting.
Sorry, Brian. Yeah,
there's a bunch of companies. This question pops up every couple of weeks or so. So, you know, let's back up a step and say, please remember your passwords. Your Windows logon password, your email password, the passwords for your eBay account, you know, your website accounts.
Well, the other thing, too, is he sounded like a young kid. I hope it wasn't his parents locking him out of his computer. And he was trying to get
out. Well, I suppose there's that. But, I'll tell you what. I'll just take a second here and say, ask Nick, the newsletter that I put out every week. It used to be just question and answer, but now it's a whole newsletter. There's tips and websites and rants and raves and questions and answers and all kinds of things. And rather than just throw them all out there for people, because you start sending out lots and lots of huge emails, you start getting listed as a spammer. And AOL already has me listed as a spammer, by the way. If you're an AOL member and you're not getting my newsletter, it's probably in your spam folder. But what I've done is now there's an explanation of what's coming, what the thing is, and then a link to the website. But you have to log in to get it because you're a member. And I can't tell you the number of people who've apparently never used their membership to actually go to the website, just read the email.
Or it's clicked on Remember Me, and now it doesn't.
Yeah. Now it doesn't, now right, because it's been machine. So long. So yeah. Right, or it's a new machine. So I'm getting a lot of people who are
just showing up.
Calling in to say what. Well, what's my password? What's my username? The problem is, of course, I've got the password set to be hidden from everybody as a safety feature, including from me, by the way. So they have to set a new password. It's a whole thing. But rock on. All right, we're going to... I wish you could see Rob. He looks like a little bobblehead there in the other room.
Yeah, there's Steve and Dave going, those young kids.
Those kids today, get off of my lawn, you little rat. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the old geezers and Rob Linton on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is indeed the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. All right, get over it. We're going to go back to the phones now. We're going to talk to Jack, patiently waiting in Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's your question?
Thanks, guys. Listen, my question concerns my virus scanner.
Mm-hmm.
I have a current updated version of McAfee virus scan on two of my computers at home.
Okay.
I run the Security Tango about once a month. I don't think I have a virus. Never found one in running that. But my I set it for a weekly update or a weekly scan after an update, or an automatic update, I guess, and then a weekly scan to be accurate. And I find that it's not scanning. A whole week or two will go by, and I'll check, and I see that it has a scan, so I'll do a manual scan, check all my settings, let it go, and then the following week it won't have run again. Can you help me figure out the problem?
What time do you have the automatic scan set to run for?
Very early in the morning on Friday.
And is
like
the
2 in the morning.
Is the computer on and awake, or has it gone to sleep?
No, I don't have any of the energy settings on.
And your McAfee is not only updated, but you've paid for it, so it's running.
Absolutely.
And it's getting the updates okay.
Yep.
And when you run a manual scan, it works.
Fine.
And this is happening on both machines.
Both machines.
What version, 9?
No, it's an updated version of 7. I got it as part of a suite.
Okay.
A McAfee suite that includes firewall and spam killer. And
This is a lovely question. Everything else is right. It should be running. Now, when you say it's not running, how do you know it's not running?
Because when I go in to do a manual scan, it'll show me the last time it scanned.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be, you know, well beyond the period where it should have run.
All right, now I have to ask this question because it's a new year. Sure. Are you sure you've got it set to the right year?
Yep. Well, yes, I checked it just the other day.
Okay.
Let's see. I think there was.
So I checked it yesterday.
It's
been a problem that's been ongoing for a month or two.
Does the McAfee scanner use the Microsoft Task Scheduler? Maybe it's the Microsoft Task Scheduler not telling McAfee to start scanning.
There were some issues, though, with version 7.
Well, yeah, there were a lot of issues with 7.
Well, really? Okay. Maybe it's time to upgrade the.
Yeah, I would go up to 9.
Okay.
And, because, I mean, that's what I run. Yeah, I have a. Do it on Thursday nights after it's downloaded the updates.
Yeah, because you've always said that the updates come from the virus scan companies on Thursday, right?
Right. So
the new files?
Yep. They're usually there Wednesday, but by the time you get to it, your machine might take up to Thursday to get it.
Yeah.
So that's why I have it run Thursday nights. I just turn off the monitors, and at 1 o'clock in the morning, it starts doing a full scan on my machine and the server.
Well, I can turn it back into Thursday. I thought Friday was the key date, but
yeah. Well, either or.
Question about the task scheduler. I set this up through the setup utility that's in the McAfee virus scan.
Right. Yep.
So yeah, I'm seeing this all over the web here.
Task scheduler, or is that?
No, I'm seeing this all over the web. There's a whole bunch of problems with both 7 and 8 as far as that's concerned. So I'd move up to 9 and see what happens. I think that's probably your best bet at this
point. It's always better to have the newer engines. It'll probably run
faster and
update better.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's the newer engine. There was a number of issues with 7.
Are they even offering updates to 7 anymore?
No, I don't know.
The DAT file updates?
Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is Steve from Rochester, New York. What's your question, Steve?
Yes, good afternoon, fellas. Really enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Hey, my question is basically regarding storage. I store data and WAV files for work. And I'm storing them on CDRs and also an external hard drive. So I have duplicates of my files.
Mm-hmm.
But am I missing? I mean, I'm worried about 10 years down the road, you know, being able to retrieve this information.
Yeah, it's great to have a CD of your stuff. But if in 10 years we don't have CD readers, what's going to happen?
Well, there's a couple of things there. First, depends on how you're storing your CDs as to whether you'll have them in 10 years.
Okay.
If you're not using the gold discs, then you've got to worry about light and heat. If you do have the gold discs, you have to worry about light and heat, but a little less. None of them last much more than a few years. I wouldn't go past 3 on a CDR myself. But they're saying 5, but that's, you know, God bless them. Good for them. You don't want to store them upright. you know, like a book, you want to store them flat because they can, because they're cheap. The substrate can actually warp if they sit upright. If they're laying flat, they have less chance to warp. That's true of every CD, but the cheap, you know, the rewritable stuff, that's more likely to happen.
Back of life.
In terms of an external hard drive, that's a great secondary storage medium. If you've got one or two of those, you might want to take a look at some offsite storage. For example, you know, you can buy storage out on the net and store some of your most important stuff out there, or perhaps just have two external hard drives, one at work, one at home. If you've got a broadband connection like DSL, you can copy the files over that fairly quickly and have them in two separate places.
But yeah, I
but
guess
again,
the bottom
every
line,
few years, I'd want to replace that hard drive,
don't expect it to last 10 years.
Nothing's going to last 10 years. But every 3 years, I would say, you know, replace the media.
Yep.
Whether it's whether you're copying a CD or DVD or whatever, and Rob's got a very good point. Thumb drives, they'll last for years if you don't write to them.
Okay.
The more they're used for like 1,000 writes. They're used 1,000 read write cycles. So 100,000 read write cycles. So if you've got a thumb drive and you fill it, then great. But you know, thumb drives are a couple of gig, and if you're you have a bunch of waves and stuff like that, that may be, you know, one per thumb drive.
Yeah.
But you definitely want to check that out in terms of time. You don't want to expect anything to last much more than about 3 years.
And that's been a story for years. The National Archives are all on 9-track tape.
Right.
And
right.
So they're trying to convert it to a new media.
Right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. All right, our next caller is Ben, who's either taken Hemlock or is from Hemlock. Which is it, Ben?
It's from Hemlock.
Ah, better, much better. Yeah. Otherwise, we should have taken you earlier.
Yeah. I drank what?
Right. In the words of Socrates, who said, I drank what? What's your question?
I have a Linux question for you.
Sure.
I have a broadband connection, and mm-hmm. I have a router between my network and the internet. And I've got a Linux file server sitting on that network. And what I want to know is it safe to not be running a firewall on that Linux file server?
Yes, I suspect it is. If you have broadband and a router, you're on your internal network.
Right.
Getting to it externally is going to require a lot of work. There's a firewall in the router.
Mm-hmm.
And Linux is inherently safer anyway. There's a built-in firewall called IP tables.
Right.
And if you've got that running, you can do man IP tables and read about it and set up all of the...
Isn't it IPFW? Or is that just in the BSD that I'm using?
It depends on which version you're running, and you know, you could run either one. I run IP tables, and it's great.
I have IP tables on the machine, but it's disabled right now.
Well, run it. Certainly let it run. In terms of what it can, well, read up on it first. That's the most important thing to do. Read up on it first and make sure that you understand what it does.
Right.
You can also go to the local Linux users group, Lugor.
Mm-hmm.
They're a great group of people, and you should be able to get lots of help from them. They're at lugor.org, L-U-G-O-R, Linux User Group of Rochester. Lugor.org, and it's a great site. They meet every month at RIT, actually.
Okay.
And you can go and talk to them about what that does. Running a firewall on your own system is not generally necessary for the desktop user if you're already using a router. But if you're running a Linux file server and you've opened it up to the internet so that other people can get at it, then yeah, absolutely, you should make sure that it's got a firewall on it. And IP tables is a great way to do that. Actually, I've done that with one of my servers at work. I was playing around and testing it, and it's actually running a program that if somebody hits it and hits it and hits it trying to break in, IP tables automatically says, no more for you.
It shut them down.
No soup for you. You're gone. You're
so
gone.
It locks him right down.
So it locks him right out. I go and look at the tables all the time, and there's all these places that don't get to it anymore, and
so
I go and look them
one
up,
IP
and they're
address,
gone. Yeah.
That IP address will be blocked.
That one IP address gets blocked. It's great. It's a great little feature, and it's pretty neat. You know, more and more people nowadays are looking at different operating systems, whether it's the Macintosh or it's Linux or it's whatever it is. And one of the best ways to get used to that new system or to find out if it's something you want to run or just to get your question answered is the local user groups.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of them around. We've already mentioned Lugor. Apple Cider is one of the groups. The Rochester Computer Club is another. And there's just a...
Speaking of local user groups, though, well, you're looking at...
Were we? Oh, yeah, we were.
I'm going to be speaking to the genealogy group.
Excellent.
This, I believe it's the 12th. They asked me to come and talk to them and just on what's going on in the computing world. And let's see.
It's really neat with genealogy. It's so much easier to find things now and find other people doing it. You know, you used to have to go to Washington, you know, state if you had relatives from Washington and ask around.
Well, now even with the, there's a place on, I believe it's West Fall Road. There's a Mormon organization there that you can look up a lot of stuff too, because they are the largest group as far as backtracking, history, and family relatives and everything else as far as the genealogy aspect of it. And they've got the biggest database around, and they can help you and point you in the right direction too, because a lot of folks are intimidated.
Yeah,
you know, when it comes to doing that. I mean, alone with my family, my dad's, like I said, one of 19, and trying to track back, and I've done quite extensive work to get him back to as far as the mid-1800s. And finding some of my relatives and everything else, and I'd still like to find out more.
Right. At any rate, if you're interested in a user group in your area, it's real easy to find. Go to techny.com. That's techny.com. Under the navigation menu on the left, you'll see user groups. You go to that, and you'll see three separate areas listed, Buffalo, Syracuse, and Rochester. Click on your area, and you'll see a list of many of the user groups that are in that area, and if not, then the fourth choice on that list is how to get yourself on the list. So you can go there and find out about the groups in your area, when they meet, what they talk about, who to make contact with. If they have their own website, then you can find the person to talk to about that. So it's a pretty nifty list by our friends at Computer Link Magazine. It's at techny.com. And then click on the user groups list and pick your area. It's a pretty neat way to get the information you want for your area. And I can't. It seems to be alphabetical, so the Apple group is second. I'm afraid Acorn is first. But basically, the important part here is if you've got a computer, you're not alone. You've got us. You've got the folks at the users group. You've got your friends and neighbors. You got a bunch of people. We'll be back here next Sunday. So for those of you who buy a new computer during the week, we'll be here for you next Sunday. And for those of you who still got a computer, hey, we'll be here anyway. We'll just basically, be here. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back here next Sunday. We'll be talking about interesting news and views on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.